Radio Free Brooklyn, its staff or management. Thanks for listening and enjoy Radio Free Brooklyn. This is what Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. You know who I am, the self-proclaimed psychotherapist with no formal training in psychotherapy that just says whatever they want. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. That makes me so happy. I love you for doing that. Do you know what? We really want you to enjoy your experience. And in order to do that, we want you to be part of our community. Okay? Will you join our community? I am personally asking you. Okay? I would love you to join our community. So what I need you to do is go to radiofreebrooklyn.org, sign up for the newsletter, check out our merch, check out our 70 plus shows. We've got everything. If you like this show, there'll be other ones just like it. And if you don't like this show, you'll like, there's something there, will, I guarantee you, there will be something you like. So anyway, what am I talking about? So anyway, I am so excited to have this bright, shining, cheery, with a dark inside guest, Lana Siebel. Hi, Lana.
Hi, I'm excited to be with you. I always feel so good being around you. And,
yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Lana and I really do have a mutual admiration. We're one of those people that when we see each other, it's just embarrassing. Oh, but you, Lana. No, you, Lisa. So anyway, here's the deal. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Lana, but before I get started, I want to tell you, Lana was here literally exactly 2 months ago. And why she's back so soon is because the last episode didn't get recorded by some weird stroke of chance. It's only happened twice in my 8 years here. And the last time it was Julio Torres, who's now a very, very famous comedian. But nevertheless, it's only happened twice. So Lana and Julio are in good company. But I did get Lana to come back. And we're going to talk about what's going on in her life. It was really beautiful because the last time she was on a couple of months ago, I'd been wanting to get back out and doing comedy again. And we really reconnected. And I actually wound up doing her open mics, which are my favorite, honest to God. Shout out Tiny Cupboard, Friday, 5:30, open mic. Don't Knock the Hustle, open mic. And, we have actually seen each other. I feel like Lana's now in the mix. Like we're actually doing Lana invited me. Okay. I'm going to say this.
Yeah,
Lana invited
please.
Me
to
do my first actual booked show, paying in Teaneck, traveling Teaneck out of state, Teaneck, New Jersey. This coming Friday night at...
Tomorrow.
Oh, shit.
Lisa shit. Just came back from L.A., so...
Yeah. I got to get ready now. Maybe I'll just... So anyway, at the Puffin Room, which is part of Open Source.
That's right.
And I'll be posting all that information on my Facebook page and stuff like that. But if you're anywhere near Teaneck, New Jersey, you should come by, okay?
You're gonna do great. I'm so excited.
No, I'm
it's gonna be a great show.
I'm excited about the car ride out there with you, Lana.
Same.
That's all I'm interested
same.
In.
Yeah,
just
we
hanging out.
We just bonded, and you know what? The proof is in. It's been years now that we just every time we see each other, I feel better after you.
Yeah,
you know?
And you know, it's funny because you are literally probably more than you know, like the first person I met when I decided in May. 2 years ago that I was going to start doing open mics because
oh, wow.
I've always wanted to do comedy. And I went and, do you know the story? I went and I was like, I'm going to go to Tiny, because it was during the pandemic, 2021 must have been.
Yeah.
And they had rooftop shows, and you were hosting the open mic. And I just thought, well, I'll go there. And it was totally booked, of course. And there were so many people there, and you were like, I'm sorry, you know, next time.
Oh, no, I had to tell
you. You turned me down,
I'm
and I
so
was
sorry.
Like, no, no. And I was like,
I feel awful.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
This is a closed group. I'm going to do it next time. I'm going to try and sign up. And then I would be really nervous about signing up, thinking, oh, she's got her friends. But, you know, and here we are. Here we are. 2 years. Look at this, yeah. guys. I told you, look at this. I'm in my 60s, okay? And I told Lana 2 years ago that I told myself, and here I am. Lana is going to be driving us to my first book paying show in out of state.
You
were
one of the few people that I saw. So I was kind of phasing out of the open mic, and now I still sometimes I'm on the road, so I can't do it. But it's the only open mic that I do myself and host, because I mainly just do shows. I kind of phased out of it, but because of meeting people like you, that's the only for me inspiration to keep doing it. Because you meet amazing people, and you know you have these great experiences. And you were one of the few people that I saw from the very beginning, and I was like, this lady's really funny, and she's very talented. And also, I love the way you dressed and your whole demeanor. And you were like, you just like, I don't know if I could say it, but like, you didn't give a shit. You were like, I just want to do this to enjoy. And then you're also so kind and supportive of me. You were just so cool. And as I know you more, I just see what a kind, creative, and smart person. You're somebody I aspire to.
Oh, my God.
I know you're saying
here
this
we,
to me.
Here we
yeah.
go. Here we yeah, go. It's no. the same. It's back. And here, this is going to be the whole show. We can't do this. We can't start now.
All right.
No, no. But we respect. And I think one of the things about Lana that I really respect is the way she's able to manage. She's an adult. This is why I identify with Lana, because she's an adult that can manage crazy, crazy people, crazy young men, and with dignity. Dignity. Oh, she really nice. Keeps the whole thing together. And when you're dealing with a big group of crazy comedians, a lot of them in their 20s, with a lot of testosterone pumping through their system, and Lana creates a very supportive environment and very professional environment. And that's not something I take for
Lisa,
granted.
Lisa, that means a lot to me, because I have to tell you, I try to be modest, but it's not easy. It's
no,
not,
no. She's
it really,
really
is a lot of
And
cuckoos.
Also, she inspires confidence in the venues that she works with. Like, I respect
nice.
Tiny Cupboard, all the people... The people that the couple that own it,
yeah.
and the whole way that you know, organization or space venue, call it what you want. They're really and
that
to me
a
really important space.
Okay, Lisa's now my publicist as well. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa.
Lana, you know, sweet. Really works well with every, you know. You need somebody to run something.
Lana would be good at it,
but you have to pay. I think at this point, you're really going to have to pay. So anyway, without getting into all the details, when I first, like Lana's career 2 years ago was just beginning to take off. And now she is really a full-time comedian with, you know, making a living as a comedian. And I'll just tell you her website. Follow her on Instagram. She makes these amazing videos, which her son is always often part of. And he is hilarious. Aww. And the two of them together, you want to see some mother son cutting up. So it's at Lana Siebel, and it's LanaSiebel. But Lana was also saying, I said, so what are we going to promote? And she has a headlining gig in Atlantic City, the home of entertainment, on March 15th. So why don't you tell us about that? We'll get started that
way. Yeah. Oh, my God. Lisa, first of all, if you're feeling blue, just talk to Lisa. Seriously. Oh, my God. Who needs a therapist when you have such a beautiful friend? Oh, my God. You just made me. And again, not the easiest week, but you just made me feel so good. I performed, I think it was last spring in Atlantic City Comedy Club, and it was at the theater. It went really well. And then one of the producers who was helping to produce Atlantic City Comedy Club saw me, and he contacted me a few weeks ago if I could headline at his new show in Atlantic City. And it's going to be March 15th, 8 p.m. And it's going to be March is Women's Month. So that's exciting. Yeah,
that is right on, sister.
Yeah. And so the venue is called, it's a really nice venue, actually. I checked it out, Rhythm and Spirits. I would love to see you guys if you're in that area. And it was it's very exciting and confirming, you know, when you perform and then somebody really respects you and puts you on. So, yeah.
Do you hear a voice in the background?
I do, but I thought maybe I was hallucinating because I'm having such a good time. I thought
no. It's something.
Is there another show request?
This is really weird. Okay, yeah. So this is a new one. You know what we're going to do, Lana?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, you and I are going to keep this going.
Yeah.
And I am going to text Rachel.
Oh, perfect.
Because I think we can still talk over
this. Yeah, we could do it, and you're recording it, so, yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, this is, you know what, the more I can talk to Lisa, this is really coming from...
This
from,
is hilarious. Oh, my God.
From amazing... This is a gift.
Okay.
Because
Lana, you know what? Here's something I do want to... talk about before we really get into what's going on in your life right now. We still have plenty to catch up on, I'm sure. Yeah. But I wanted people to really understand your background because we went through this last time. I explained you're a refugee from Ukraine.
Yeah, I actually found a paper. I was going to bring it to you that actually says refugee.
Really?
So there's proof. Yeah, I thought, you know, I would say loosely refugee, right? Immigrant. But yeah, it was actual, running away from what was happening.
And you came here when you were seven. Ukraine is obviously a big focus, but you came here at another time. And
yes, it was still it was very strange.
Did you speak Russian?
So it was the former Soviet Union when I was coming over, and it was the USSR. So everything was, I don't know how else to say it, but Russia, Ukraine, there was no real differentiation. Everything was, and everybody spoke Russian. And then after I came, September of 1989, and then a month later, the Berlin Wall came down, quote unquote communism came down, and a few years later, you know, there was a revolution. It was very strange. I still, don't know
were
really
you
what's going
afraid?
On.
Yeah. Tell us about what that felt like when did you have to evacuate in a hurry?
So, I guess it's a long, long history, but, the Jewish people, as well as any people with, any kind of religion, were heavily persecuted. So, you know, our friends who weren't Jewish, who were, Christian, were also, but especially if you're a Jewish person, your passport would not even say citizen. You would be considered, less than second class. So our passports actually said, Jew. So my mom's passport, Jew, mine, Jew, and not even, my joke is they didn't even conjugate it. Everybody was just Jew, which is a bit comical. But what that meant really is my brother couldn't study in certain institutions. My parents wouldn't have certain rights. It was always a scary time, even though, you know, I was seven and... You know, when you're seven, sometimes you look at your childhood as not being so bad. But I remember there was one time my dad, we got a new TV, and he said, you can't tell anyone in your kindergarten class that we have this because the government could take it away. So it was always things that you always feel like, it was a little bit like the Wild Wild West. It was very, you know, and the rules kind of kept being made up as you go along. So my parents got very, very tired of living that kind of life where they feared everything. And they wanted to start a new life years prior. There was a chance that they would leave even before they had me. But three of my grandparents passed away when they were 60 from cancer. So that's life in Ukraine for you. Yeah. So they couldn't go. They needed to take care of them. And then finally, when they got the chance, their first chance, they ran. And I'm very grateful to them. I think that they were 40. They were 40 years old mm-hmm. when they came. My mom was 39. And mm-hmm. And back then, it was a difficult immigration because first you had to go through Austria. And if you guys ever come see my set, you know, I joke about that. It was, you know, the refugee camps we stayed at. I give 0 stars. It wasn't a vacation. Also, I thought we were going to Australia. So <That's>, I felt gypped. I didn't understand.
So anyway, yeah. So you understand a little bit of Lana's background.
Yeah. And then we had to go to Italy for a few weeks, which, again, also people think is a vacation. It was not. It was, you know, camps. And we had to go through immigration to get a lot of people would not be allowed to go to America. They have to go somewhere else. So
you mean as a refugee?
As a refugee. So
when you were like 7?
As an artist, I think you'll appreciate this. My parents, all the refugees tried to look like they were poor and sad and ripped up clothing. My parents said, no, we're going to look dignified and act like we're going to be an asset to this country, not begging for things. So they dressed beautifully. They got me together, you know, and they acted with, and they were one of the few people that were allowed to go into America after 24 days in Italy. And, you know, it was a proud story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you gotta love that. I just got the chills.
Yeah.
You know,
it was beautiful.
Gotta love that.
And also, you know, lifelong of trauma of looking presentable and being presentable. So people will let me into places, which is not a bad thing, I guess. But
I guess not.
But just like,
so that's
that's why really I look so in control. Yeah. Cause I'm not, I feel very out of control. Yeah.
You got traumatized into that.
Yeah,
at least something. No, but Lana has made a lot of really, she's made a really positive life for herself.
Oh, thank you.
And I've got to tell you,
I got very lucky. I got so lucky with such loving, good people, including you. I really treasure that. I think it's so important. Just appreciate
that.
Well,
you value,
I value
that.
I really do.
She married a great guy. She's
I got so lucky. Oh, Lisa, I would pray. I'd go to yeshiva. So
really?
I went to yeshiva. And I remember praying when I was about 12 years old. You know, when you become a woman in the Jewish religion at 12, you know. But
you had a bat mitzvah?
Well, in McDonald's. It was not traditional.
Okay.
Yeah, again, that's part of the stand-up.
No,
it wasn't. MC was Ronald McDonald. Anyways.
I like it.
See, thank you.
Got to go with it.
You got to come see the
stand-up. It worked.
Yeah, it worked. But it's true. It is true.
You're
it,
a woman and you're Jewish.
And Jewish.
Still.
And
work.
Yeah. But so I remember praying, you know, to God. I'd be like, please get me a good husband. You know, I'd really appreciate it. And if it's not too much to ask, even though I know I'm praying, you know, I'm in yeshiva and I guess I'm praying to a Jewish God. By the way, I'm 12. So, but I was like, please, God, if you don't mind, if you could make him not Jewish. Not that I have anything wrong against the Jewish people. I love my people, but he can't be like me. I can't have two of me together. And God answered my prayers, you know. My husband is Italian-American Catholic. We're both not very religious, but I think the point was that he's a good person. That's
yeah,
what it was.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm just trying to make it comical. But is my father-in-law, not Jewish, but exactly me. We are the same person. We ended up, my husband married his father.
Yeah, my husband is half Italian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My son, yeah.
Half Italian, half German.
Oh, yeah. There's a part German in them, too. And I guess I'm German-Jewish as well, so.
Yeah. See, that was a tip I wish I'd known when I was younger. You have to pray to find the right guy.
You got
to
pray.
And
you
got to
ask for some specifics. Very specific.
I didn't get married till I was 54. I
That's
really should
awesome.
Have been. I wish I'd known.
Yeah,
you could pray for that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just want to tell you a couple more details about Lana. Because what I mean, Lana is really exceptional in what she's been able to make happen in her life. I mean, besides that, she's a comedian, which is one of the hardest art forms to make a living at. She also was a professional ballroom dancer, and she was ranked number seven in the U.S. for ballroom dancing. So here's somebody who really, really has drive and a work ethic and good values. And that's what I want you to know. Now we can catch
Thank
up.
Thank you, Lisa.
There, we did the background.
Oh, my God.
And also, did I say this? If you go to episode, Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, the archive 277, you can hear the original interview with Lana, which I think was almost 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And you can hear more details about her journey to America. All right.
And that interview was a blast. I remember it just that hour flew by.
Yeah.
It was really,
I didn't hardly know you then.
Yeah.
So anyway, so what's going on now? What can we talk about?
Oh,
how's
wow.
your life?
I feel like everybody, it's important to know you work so hard at getting these goals, and then you think you're going to reach this goal and all your problems are going to go away, and then you're going to be so happy and everything's going to be perfect. And, then you realize, just more problems, you know?
So
more
your goal originally when I first met you was to be a working comedian, right? And now you're a working comedian.
And I'm very sad a lot of the time. My 10-year-old son says, your life is very, very sad.
He says that to you?
Yeah. And you know what? He's very right.
He has a great sense of humor.
He really does. He's the best. He really gets me. He really gets me. And also a talent himself. I keep telling him not to forget me because he's been writing all these films himself, and he's does the videos. He has his own YouTube channel, which when he gets older I'll let him advertise it more, but he's always looking at how many subscribers, and he tells me to go on YouTube, which is again a smart move. But he's he watches all these very deep, incredible movies, and now he's on a Scorsese kick. We just watched Bronx.
Holy cow.
And Goodfellas, which again, he's 10. Maybe not the best idea.
Better than the many
other
options.
It is a
and
classic.
Better than video games.
That is true. He doesn't really play video games, but he does.
Oh my God.
He does want to see The Godfather, the whole trilogy. So we did go see that with him.
Wow.
Yeah, He can sit through a 6-hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
It really is.
He loves music. He's a big musical fan. He really
What kind of music does he like?
Any kind of musical, he will go. They just went to see my father-in-law and him, Titanic, which is loosely based on the movie Titanic, which they went to see Titanic as well, and he was just so overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah.
So yesterday we were actually having a conversation, and we were walking by, so I used to go to Pace University. That was the college I went to. And, 9/11, when it was happening, I was going to college, and I was telling him about, and he was like, this is making me so sad. So then he started telling me about Titanic, and we did this old age Jewish thing of who's going to make one sadder, who's going to
that's pretty good if a 10-year-old can work with somebody who's an immigrant from the Ukraine.
He won.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's impressive. But he really does seem to like to enjoy being in your videos and playing with what's going on in your life. And
he's
and does he come to shows?
So he's 10, so I'm trying to be very careful with him, but maybe in a few years I think he wants to start doing comedy himself. And to be honest with you, so we gave him our cell phone to use. He went to this birthday party. It was only a few kids, and we were nervous. We just wanted to make sure he's okay. And he was really good at answering us back. He was telling everything that's going on. So he was very responsible. So I feel like he is a really responsible, good guy.
Like you can really trust him.
You can trust him. Because we were like, please just don't, you know, because a lot of kids, they're young. They forget. I'm like, please just, when we call you or we message you, you know, it's our generation. It's not a great thing to be so anxious. But
being a parent is anxiety producing.
Very anxiety producing, yeah. But he was great about it. He's really like a little adult. He's on top of it. Yeah.
Wow. He really likes being part of your family's like a real team.
Yeah, I think we
you
really
guys
enjoy being
well together.
During the pandemic, it was kind of weird how we all got along so well. Yeah, we really liked each other. Jesus.
It's enough to make you want to have children.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't perfect.
I'm pretty hard boiled about that, but.
No, it kind of worked out, but you know, but a lot of times, you know, and I talk about this in my stand-up, I'm like the bad guy, which granted I am, but still,
you mean setting down the rules, your husband.
That's what you would think, but like, no, actually not good at cooking, cleaning, which is great because then I get to not do it. So, you know, if any moms or dads are listening, this is how you get out of doing things. You just don't do it for years. So, and then you're told that's all right.
Go. So your husband's good at that.
He's thankfully good at helping him with homework and cooking, but, I'm not the worst. Actually, they keep telling me, you're not, you know, you're
I'm
too
sure
hard
you're
on
not.
I'm very hard on
I'm
myself.
Sure you're not. You I know, am. It's yeah. funny. My husband yeah. is really good at that stuff, too.
Yeah. And I think, Lisa's smart like me. She got out of it, too.
I think it's a really good example for, I think it was really a good example for my stepson, just like it is for your son.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
To actually, my son is really good at cooking. He's really starting to do it. Yeah.
And my father-in-law was also really good at taking charge of things.
I got to give it up for my father. I said I would talk about him today, and he's really good at all that stuff as well. And my father, too, he was the one. So my mom would go to dental school when we came to America because she was a dentist in Ukraine, and she was 40. She was told, you're too old. Maybe you can go start working at a Russian produce store and be one of the clerks there. And she said, oh no, you don't. And you know, so she's got that very sheer force of will, which is a gift, but also in a lot of ways, you know, is not the easiest sometimes, but I do admire her for that. Constant going to dental school at 40 years old and learning a new language is pretty remarkable. What I saw, what she had to go through is, it kind of showed me that nothing is really impossible. But sometimes I'm very fortunate for my husband where he says, but you can't hurt yourself. You can't do this to a point where you're abusing yourself.
You're dancing,
putting yourself in danger. You really have to, but you still have to. Thankfully,
Hooked T Neck is a safe place.
Oh,
to
it
go.
Is. Yeah, no, don't worry. It's not. Some of the places, though, I would go to, and sometimes I'd have my husband's son drive me, and they drive me. I'm not going to say which places, but they drive me a block away and they go, you know, we're going to the nicer part of town. Good luck here. We'll pick you up in a few hours.
Makes them nervous.
It's deserted. Yeah, it's
good.
Yeah.
Make them a little nervous.
Exactly.
You know, make them appreciate you.
Exactly.
So it's interesting what you were saying, though, like some of, now that you are a working comic, I want to hear what turned out better than you expected and what turned out worse.
Oh, interesting. I think, you know, I think this is very relatable to any kind of performance art. It's always the anticipation of pre-show, especially when you have to be doing more time and you're the
headlining Atlantic
City. It's a lot of pressure. Yeah.
45 minutes. You do like 45 minutes.
Now. Yeah.
That's overwhelming to me. Just the idea of keeping the set list in your, how do you?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you do practice it, but it's once you're on stage, it's great. You know, you're connecting, you're going, it's working, but it's the anticipation. It would be the same when I was acting, when I was dancing. It was the anticipation. You go through such dread and such horrible scenarios in your mind. That it's a little overwhelming. That once you do it, it's quite an amazing release.
But you just, that happens every single time.
Every single time.
What, you're afraid you're going to screw it up? Or what do you imagine happening?
Yeah, all kinds of things. Something happening where something rowdy comes up.
Oh, wow, crazy people.
Crazy people.
You're going to be heckled.
Yeah, heckled or hurt physically or
oh, wow.
Yeah.
You really go there.
Yeah, I go everywhere. Oh, it's all kinds of scenarios. But luckily, the going over the set really helps, which is, again, very set. Like, I think you were really funny about it last time you mentioned. Like, I was saying that I practice my set as I'm driving up to different places. And you were like, yeah, that is very set. It was. It is. But it helps me, like, focus on this is the work that has to be done.
Right. Right. Do you worry? This is what I would be worrying about. I'd be worrying, like, your show in Atlantic City. Yeah. I would be all – the thing I would be focused on is – the authority figure, I'd be like, that guy's going to think I suck. Do you worry about that at all?
I used to.
But you're not now. You're like confident. You don't, it just doesn't bother, it doesn't bother you either way. That's my neuroses. I'm wondering how.
No, I used to. That was especially, I remember I would be like certain people, I feel like, you see them as like a parental figure or disapproving or you, but now I think I was starting to do a lot of work on this book. What's it called? Julia Cameron. I don't know if you know Life.
The Artist Way.
Yeah, The Artist Way. The Artist Way. Yes.
I know that book.
Yes,
I've read it.
No. I just during the pandemic I started it and it was so about like journaling 3 pages a day.
Do you do that?
I try. Oh, when I do, I feel better because a lot of times I'm just constantly going over and over my neuroses and my anxieties. So that would actually was a really great tool. Certain other things about not focusing on the one negative person and trying to focus on the positive, that really, so I bought a whole series of her books.
Oh, wow.
And it's really been helping. And, you know, my husband and son make fun of me.
Yeah, right.
Artist Way. They would come in with dances with like little, like, I don't know, like, I don't know. They were just unbelievable. But
I'm glad.
Yeah. So talk about hecklers. I mean, they really trained me. Like, I don't care, you know. What? There's nothing that I can't handle that I haven't heard.
Do you practice in front of them?
No. They keep telling me, like, well, why don't you practice in front of us and we won't laugh. But like, I don't think so.
I couldn't do it either.
Yeah. They really, you know, sometimes I get mad at them, but now I'm thinking about it. It really helps me with, because they say so many different things, but they say it to each other too. And they don't mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's always the whole, women. And then I get really, are you kidding me? So it really, again, they train me. It's a, it's like Rocky, you know, but comedy.
Yeah. You know, when they say women, just bear in mind that they're the ones doing the cleaning and cooking.
Exactly. You're right. You know what? I can't be mad at them because they are. They really are.
So do you ever think now, like, wow, I reached my goal. I'm actually doing this? Or
You never feel that way. Enough? It's never enough. And that's another thing I'm trying to work on and just try to be a little more satisfied with each thing and each moment.
Each achievement.
Easier said than done. Yeah.
Because you're getting bigger gigs now, right?
Bigger,
longer.
Longer and you.
I know you're
sounds
only
sounds like a commercial, but anyways, bigger,
longer. Ladies,
I can't help it. Sorry, guys, we're doing comedy. So, it feels like more pressure. You just feel more pressure. You feel more like, oh, am I good enough for this one? Oh, I hope I don't. I hope there. It's worth people, you know, having a babysitter and coming over to watch this gig and driving and buying the tickets. So you feel like I really want to do
it
good.
Right, 'cause now people are paying.
I just really want I know, right? Just really want to do well. You really want to work on and be
people are paying real money to see you. Wow, that's something I haven't really had to deal with.
Well, you will.
Maybe, I don't know.
You will.
So well, what about the the lifestyle. I mean, that seems really...
Yeah, it's not a great lifestyle.
Did you anticipate that? Did you think about that? Or did you anticipate that? Or what is the lifestyle? You tell me. As a working mom.
Yeah. It's, you know, we have to get up like around 6:30 every morning to drive my son. And then, you know, a lot of scheduling and working on things. And then the gigs are late. So by the time, you know, 7, 8 p.m. rolls around, you feel like you just want to go to sleep. So you really have to force yourself. And also, just doing mundane things all day and being like a mom and then feeling like, oh, I just don't feel good about myself. But then having that release is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. It is. Then you do feel, you know, you come back and you're like, oh, I got to work on my craft. I got to get better. I got, and then the next morning at 6 a.m., you feel like you want to kill yourself because you're so tired and you have to go through that again.
And your husband, he works
full-time. Yeah, yeah.
He's a full-time job.
He full-time job, and he really helps me out and watches my son.
Yeah, he's a
lawyer. Yeah,
he's a lawyer.
Yeah. So he, it's.
Can you believe this? This is an overachiever. You're not going to ever. Don't. You're never going to get this together.
No, I'm kidding.
But the artist, I'm trying to process this myself. Somebody who had such little responsibility for anybody but me, although I have, that's hard. Yeah. That's not easy.
It's not. That's the thing. Yeah, I'm very grateful to them to get me out of, they get me out of my own brain. It was harder to just be with me and my own thoughts.
It sounds good and it sounds like.
It sounds like it.
It's a lot of hard work. Yeah. But also the way that your son and the three of you are really a team makes that does sound like a real bonus that.
Yeah,
you can't take for granted, right?
I don't. That I feel incredibly lucky. Yeah. And my father-in-law is great too, and they get along really well, and I feel very close with him.
Somebody pitching in.
He watches him once a week, and they look forward to it. You know, they go to the movies together. They do their musicals. They really have such a beautiful connection, and they're also very similar. I don't know how I got a father-in-law who's just so amazing. My mother-in-law, who passed away a few years ago, is very, very close with her as well. She was a woman who taught me so much warmth and kindness and strength, and I got very lucky with them. They're not perfect. I just want, if my father-in-law is listening to this, you are not perfect. we give each other a lot of, quarrel a lot.
We know what's going on.
Yeah, we're close. This is a radio. And that we can joke around, which is nice. Yeah. It's nice when you can really joke around with each other like that.
So what would you imagine, like, what do you think? Your next, like, that's, what's the next level? What's the next goal?
That's so interesting because I don't think there is. I think now I'm just starting to figure out.
But are there
out
different gigs? Or are you oh my God, I thought now that I'm, are you like, I made it, I'm here. And now you're like, what?
That's it? You feel like, but the next goal would be to get a late night spot, and because that would be great, and it would open up more opportunity, like a late night show
on TV.
Yeah. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So hopefully that was in the plan. You know, maybe like a. If any late nights are listening, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, any of the Jimmies, I'll do any of the Jimmies, or anybody. Those are all great and things to aspire to. And also, I just need to really work on, and you probably hear this, as mundane as it is, to get a great tape. So sometimes you can have the best comedy performances, but you don't tape it, or it doesn't.
How do you do that?
I try to tape my own sets, but it just doesn't come out as quality as you need it
your own sets audio visual
video. Visual yeah yeah, yeah. You tape so it's I might just get something of different tapes together and put it together. But it's where people, a lot of people just hire somebody to tape them, but I don't see that as realistic. But it seems
why do you say that?
I don't know.
Is it because you the money or the pressure of having to make that one set?
Yeah, both, exactly.
You're going to spend all this money to have a shitty set.
Yeah, you feel like, what do you always feel like it's, yeah. And then it always, when you feel that way, it always turns out to be something good. You never end up recording something that you think is worthwhile in quality. So I guess that's
everybody's struggle.
Everybody's struggle. Everybody's feeling that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's just getting, and then also, I finally started to release little comedy bits, and there was this one guy who said her voice is annoying, which I thought was so funny because I'm like, talk to my husband and son, you know, like it's nothing I've never heard of. Also, Gilbert Gottfried had one of the most annoying voices, but is one of the most admirable comics, so I thought it was a compliment. And I was almost going to engage, but then I'm like, I can't engage with that because it's too time consuming and too much energy to engage with somebody like this.
So somebody responded, let's comment. Yeah. Aren't we not supposed to look at comments?
Yeah, no, we are. And I had other experiences where there was a couple of, you know, they call them the trolls. Yeah. Which is just, I guess there's some people who like to engage with that. I just don't because I don't have the energy or time. And they're professionals, you know, they do this all day. So I can't compete with that. So right. I'd like to go on the positive side. Yeah.
The negative,
I don't have.
No, that's right. Because most comedians start out when they're, or a lot of successful comedians, they start out when they're teenagers.
Yeah.
In college, and they have absolutely no responsibility, have a real job,
and they have the energy to engage with that kind of
for them to do 5 spots a week doesn't seem or 10 or whatever it is you know, all that stuff, so they get started before they have a family. But you started after you had a family.
That was actually what helped me. It's, mm-hmm. It's something I wanted to do for so many years. When I was even a child, I remember 9 or 10, I remember, but not really having the words. And then when my son was 2 and I was overwhelmed and feeling like, what's the point? I realized this has been something I really wanted to do for so many years.
You have early influences?
Oh, that's a good question.
Where did you were like, I want to do comedy? Where'd that come from?
I think I always felt like you said, that I have this ability to make people laugh, and I have a very external cheeriness, but a very internal darkness. And I think I felt like I connected with the comedic, you know, perspective of being a depressive. And also, I think my husband is, he's still to this day, no matter how many comics, and I love them all, but he's the person that makes me laugh the hardest. He's so funny. He's got a real dark, funny side. How he describes in words, and sometimes the embarrassing awkwardness of how he says that is just so funny. He's always made me laugh, really.
So, has he ever wanted to do comedy?
He really doesn't know.
He doesn't want to be on stage.
He does not an ounce, which is also very, I just find him so admirable. He's somebody
does
I admire.
Want that
he does not, he doesn't have that kind of empty thing that needs to be filled.
know, it's really interesting because.
But he is a good actor. He wanted to be a director since he was little, and he was an actor as well. And he was very, very good. And he's a really great writer as well.
He studied film
in NYU, and he was amazing. He's such an amazing writer and director. And maybe we can collaborate and still work together because that talent is really something that he has.
Yeah,
he's a really talented person.
Yeah,
very smart too. And not somebody. Also very humble. He doesn't ever talk about it or brag. You know, you really have to like ask him. He's not going to be like pretentious or anything, but he's so interesting and knowledgeable. This guy is really,
So, wow.
Yeah, I really admire
him.
Wow. Yeah.
So there's a family film in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm really trying to work. If he's listening, I hope.
So tell me about when your experience of being on stage, when you started doing with the dancing, like how is that different? Like, did you get anything out of ballroom dancing was your thing, right? Did you get anything out of that
well,
you
I was
used
very
now?
Self-conscious. Yeah, it was a whole, you know, I was I think
that's
about 9 or 10.
Look.
Yeah, it was
you started when you were 9 and 10.
I started and then I quit because I was so embarrassed of my weight. I felt very overweight. And
were all the girls like really?
Yeah, I felt like all the girls were. Or maybe I was not even looking so much.
No,
I was just so embarrassed for myself.
You couldn't take that kind of attention.
I couldn't. Yeah, I was really just ashamed of how I looked.
Wow.
But I think it had to do with a lot of unprocessed trauma of maybe the immigration and being alone when I came to America and being lonely.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the dancing was a way to build on your resilience.
Yeah, it was a release.
Trauma you went through. Did you want to do dance or did somebody?
I did.
You wanted to dance.
At first, it was my friend who joined and she was a lot thinner and shorter. So she was a good body type. I was a lot bigger than her, we were the same age, but I was so much bigger than her.
Right.
And I felt very self-conscious and, and then I quit for a few years and then I got a whole eating disorder and felt proud of myself for that.
I
became anorexic.
Really?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. But to a point where I could still function well and dance. And it was interesting because I got such good positive feedback. You know, she's
for
so
being
thin.
So skinny.
She, being so skinny. She said, you know, she dances so well now. So it was a lot
of
positive. Yeah.
That's terrible. Yeah, How old were you then?
I was about 12. And I remember the school would call the teachers and the principals would say, you know, she's too thin. She's not really eating, and my mom's like, "Oh, thank you." Well, she's gonna.
Did your mom
know.
Want you to be thin for dancing and stuff?
I think she was very proud of me. She did. I really think they had no idea about
about not having enough food.
Exactly. So to them, it was like, she's
God.
Willpower. Now there's enough food, and she's. Which I, you know, the older I get, the more I understand them and they really did, you know, sacrifice so much and work so hard. And, but also it's good to know they weren't perfect. They didn't know a lot of things.
Yeah.
And they had to worry about so much that,
and you had a brother.
Yeah. And I had a brother too, who, by the time he was like 18, he pretty much moved out. 19, he got married at a very early age, which didn't work out, but now he's married to someone great and amazing sister-in-law. Oh, he also went through a lot.
It was a lot
and even till now I'm really wanting us to get to a better place as a family, because I think when we get around each other there's still this sadness and this still thing. Yeah, my parents, my brother, I think we all went through things that we never really worked out. I'm the only one that really mentions the whole immigration. I think I don't, like last time I talked about it's like almost we've never really worked anything
out.
When
was the last time you saw them together?
All together, I think about a month ago.
Oh, see them pretty regularly.
We see once a couple of months, and it's getting better. Things are getting a little better, but it's like you would think after all these years we'd have things worked out a little, but I think it's just getting to a place that I think I want to be a little more not painful.
Really good.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of isolated. We don't talk about anything. We don't really.
Wow,
that
would be really brave and probably healing if you can.
Yeah, I think,
and also like you really appreciate what your parents sacrificed for you.
I do. Yeah,
and you want them to know that.
I really want them to know that, but I also wish they could understand that when I make fun of them, it's coming from a place of love, and it's also coming from a place of helping me survive better and look at things.
You make fun of them and they get mad?
I think they still, they don't know, but I think if they ever see it, I don't know. I think I'm.
Is that in your act that they might see it, or is that in the room when you're hanging with
when
them?
I'm in the room, it's very interesting because I'm not allowed to be funny, like in the film. Like if I, for years, I think it's getting a little better now, but it would be like I say something. And they would look at me like I'm, you know, the worst person ever. And then my husband might say the same thing. And it's so funny. It would be. And my husband would laugh because I'd say something really observational or funny or just like Joker. And they get so upset. I think they still don't really know. I mean, I showed my dad a tape from years ago and it's part of my act. And he said, is this a job interview? So
and then, this is a job interview. Stand-up comedy
no,
he
couldn't
from a
have
job
on stage
interview.
With a microphone. And,
wow.
Yeah, and maybe he meant audition, but then I told my mom also years ago, and she said this is also part of the act. But she said, I will do comedy now. Take me to Comedy Central. That's exactly what she said. So,
well, you know, funny. This is the most common thing I hear. Yeah. We hear from creative people all the time, no matter what level. You hear it with celebrities, famous actors. You know, my parents didn't understand, or they bring their parents to to like the Academy Awards so they can finally be proud of them.
It's never going to happen.
And
I know.
They just can't picture that their kid could be in front of a room full of people having them all laughing.
Yeah, no, they're never going to, because they don't understand me in real life or really listen. So it's not going to be the same. Like in stand-up, it's just going to be me being upset that they're not paying attention or listening or not understanding. But also it has to do with, them being immigrants and not maybe...
Not being well versed in American culture.
But it's interesting. My mom, when it's convenient, she understands everything. And then when she doesn't want to, all of a sudden she doesn't understand. So I think she went to dental school and graduated. So I think she understands more than some reason they don't understand me. Some when I speak, when words come out of my mouth, they shut down. I don't know.
I think it's really hard. Now that I'm a stepmom and I have a 34-year-old stepson, I see him as a full-fledged adult. But I think sometimes, I talk to my husband about it, but I think that it's really hard as a parent to, like, you have such a strong impression of your child as a child. I think a lot of times they have a really hard time breaking out of it and seeing them the way other people see them.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Do you ever bring your
friends
or another friend around? I wonder if that would help.
It's helped so much. My husband, my father-in-law, my son,
see you with other people.
And they also see just how dysfunctional my parents could be. It's comical. It's almost comical. They're like, it's like you step back and it's entertaining and it's so funny the way they're just very hardworking. They have their way of doing things and it's like watching a hurricane, but when you're in the hurricane it's very difficult to saw that craziness. I don't know how much more time we have, but I have so many stories.
7 minutes.
You have
used your sense of humor as a way
helps.
Find compassion.
It's the only way. Yes.
Right?
It's not. I mean, therapy helped too.
Right.
But
therapy.
I just talked to my brother a few days ago. He's like, I can't deal with art. They're going through some issues now, but it's also the way they go about it is so difficult. They make things so much more difficult than they need to be. They don't do things like normal people should be doing, like calling a doctor when your pulse is almost like you're, They don't like to call the doctor. They don't trust anybody. They're, because they're dentists. Authority, physical therapy. Right. I've been asking my mom to go for years. She refuses and then she couldn't walk. So it's like my brother now was like, I can't take it anymore. Whatever you want to do. And I,
so they don't like to call. Do you think it's a government? Do they have any fear of the government or authorities?
I think
that
is true too. But I really think they just think that they can do everything themselves. They think that they know better than anyone else. I like it too, to a point where it's so dangerous. too.
Oh, yeah. Well, with health things.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about getting them to go?
This is what I'm working on right now. I've been doing this for a couple of days now. I'm trying to break through, but... Somebody needs to step in. Yeah, Yeah. Because they have accomplished so much. They have done things that are...
Yeah, unimaginable.
Yeah, unimaginable. But sometimes you do need...
They don't want to go to a doctor.
They know help to them is like the end. Yeah.
Somebody to fix the plumbing? How about anything?
Yeah. They tried as much as they could. They do everything themselves, which is not the greatest thing.
Yeah, I can imagine some humor there with people in their 70s not being it. What do they do? Like, what kind of stuff?
I'll tell you, like, this is my husband was like, I get it now. Like, so years ago, when I was actually just pregnant with my son, Mother's Day, right? My dad picks me up. His sister's in the car. My mom and the sister don't get along very well. You know, typical story. Anyways, they were already like tense and nervous. Finally, my dad drops off his sister, which is great. Then my mother... they start arguing. She lights up a cigarette. The cigarette falls on the floor and almost burns her foot. My dad doesn't stop. They keep going.
Oh my God.
this is while I'm pregnant. Then 10 minutes later, my dad doesn't wait, you know, when you're going through, I guess it was to Staten Island, you know, the pole that's supposed to go up so the car can go through. He almost runs through the pole. We're already... we're already like late, and then I guess my mom was trying to get out of the car. The car keeps moving. The door is open. Anyways,
God. Oh my God.
My husband's
that's
like, I
so
need a drink.
Insane.
And that, I think they make these stressors. When life is going okay, they make these stressors for themselves.
They can't handle it.
They can't handle life just being okay. And that's where the comedy comes in. But it's very hard when you're actually in it. And when my husband saw what I had to go through on a daily basis, and I'm like that. Sometimes I work myself up because that's what I'm used to. That's what life is like. Yeah it's very exciting.
They never take the easy way out.
No.
Think everything's really hard. I can be like that, I think.
Yeah.
But I kind of know it. Like, I kind of do things really the hard way, and then I realize, oh, I'm really being neurotic, and that's why it's so much harder. And this is really like
you have awareness. They have zero. Imagine that with zero awareness.
No.
And like, oh, what did we do wrong?
Yeah.
Where did we go? Oh, we tried.
They blame other people?
Oh, everybody. It's everybody's fault. It's everybody else.
Oh, good. Oh, well, that's good.
So right.
I'm glad about that. So they don't
It's a combination. It's on themselves. And see, just when you thought things would get a little easier. No, it's both. It's them and it's others. But it's also no awareness mixed with... It's like the perfect recipe for like if you're watching a Three Stooges movie. But it's hard to be in the Three Stooges. So it's amazing. I'm very lucky with all this material. I got to write more about this.
I want to see that. I want to see that.
It's
that
a
would
lot.
Be a really good
I got to process it, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot.
Lisa, and I'm glad there's witnesses now. At least it's not just me. I'm not the crazy one. It really is them.
So anyway, we're gonna have to wrap up.
This is fun.
Sadly,
yeah. This
but anyway, not really because we're going to Teaneck tomorrow.
Can't wait.
So I want to thank you again for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Do you know I've been doing this 8 years, folks, wow. And I've over 300 episodes on the archives. So if you go to my show page on radiofreebrooklyn.org, you can access a lifetime. You could probably, that's an hour, 350 hours. You do the math, stay in all weekend. But anyway, and I want to thank Lana for being here. And I want to remind you that she is at Lana Siebel on Instagram. That's S-I-E-B-E-L. Lana and I will both be performing at the Puffin Room tomorrow.
Cultural Forum, yeah, I can't
cultural
wait.
Cultural Forum tomorrow night.
7 p.m., yep.
At 7 p.m. in Teaneck, New Jersey.
Can't wait. Lisa's going to be so great.
We're both. No, this yes. is going